Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here it comes. Outside the left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
Cubs win.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
Hey, one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Maybe Casper playing the guitar really into it.
Len Casper.
Cubs win.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Len Casper joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. He, of course, is the television play-by-play man of the Chicago Cubs joining us now. Dan's on vacation. He's out trying to track down the Humboldt Park Gator. Mark Grody is in. Len is on. Len, how was the All-Star break, my man? You feeling refreshed?
The Humboldt Park what?
The Gator. Have you unplugged, my friend?
I don't know anything about
this. Oh, this is maybe the favorite thing that's ever happened to me. There is a 4 to 5 foot alligator loose in the Humboldt Park Lagoon. It has been out there for the better part of 36 hours. Don't worry, though, because Alligator Bob, a member of the Chicago Herpetological Society, is out there searching for it. Traps have been set. The public has been alerted, and reporters are on the scene. This has been consuming Chicago, and really the show, for the last 2 days.
Wow. Okay. Well, as a former resident of Florida, those are animals you do not want to mess with.
No. No, not at all. But we got Alligator Bob on the scene, so we should be good.
Great.
So, obviously, not following the Gator story, what have you been up to?
Just kind of unwinding and resetting, and Mark can relate, years past, and they call the dog days of August usually, you know, or dog days of summer, mid-August, but I think it's late June, early July when you see a little bit of a finish line in the four-day break. The Cubs obviously limped to that finish line, had that long stretch of 50 games in 52 days, but it came at a good time, let's put it that way, and nice long homestand to start the second half with the Pirates, the Reds, and the Padres. And the thing about the National League is there are no really bad teams. And even teams that are under 500 are dangerous. And the Cubs have learned that the hard way. They have lost all three series against the Reds. Pirates feel like they're very much in it. So it's going to be, you know, going 0 to 60, I guess, once we hit the ballpark tomorrow. There's no easing back in.
Len, speaking of alligators, the Cubs, as you said, have this nice long homestand to begin the second half. I was talking about the Pirates and the Reds and, to a lesser degree, the Cardinals. While I do take those teams seriously, I still think that by far the Cubs are the best team in the division talent-wise, with honorable mention to Milwaukee. It feels like they got a chance to not put those two teams away, the Pirates and the Reds, but to really plant their flag once again in the division right out of the chutes here.
No, I agree with you, Mark, and we've been waiting maybe for that for the last 6 weeks or so, and it hasn't happened. And, you know, generally under Joe Maddon, last year not quite as much, but 2 years ago, it kind of reminds me of 2017. Now, the Cubs, on the final day of the break, I think it was basically today that we went out and got Jose Quintana, who had that big start in Baltimore, to complete the sweep. And the Cubs, I believe, went 6-0 on that road trip. Does that sound right to you,
That's
Mark?
Right.
The Baltimore and Atlanta?
Yes.
And then really were the best team in the league from that point forward. You can't count on that every year. You hope that you get that this year. I think one big thing to figure out, and we hope to know more the next 2 days, is what is the status of Cole Hamels? The way it was left is that they weren't really going to come up with a game plan in terms of, you know, when he might be back until after the break. So he's been resting, basically, from what I understand. And you hope that he's back sooner than later, for sure. Yu Darvish is going to take the ball tomorrow. So of all the issues the Cubs have had, I think it does come back to the basics, and that is your rotation being set up to give you a chance to win, to take pressure off the bullpen, and you know, make sure you can win a 2-1 or 2-0 ball game every once in a while, because when the Cubs have been at their absolute best in the Joe Maddon era, they've had one of the best rotations, if not the best, in the National League. So I start there as we move into the post-All-Star break portion of the season.
Talking Cubs with Len Casper. He, of course, the television play-by-play man for the team. Len, this is on me, but I kind of think some Cubs fans are underrating, undervaluing, or underappreciating Chris Bryant. And I'm using Twitter to canvas, so that's my bad. But what do you make of Chris Bryant's season, and is he somewhat underappreciated to you?
I think it's not even somewhat. I think he's completely underappreciated. He made the All-Star team for a reason. It was not a reputation a vote from the players. It was he's a really good player vote. I believe he's in the top five or six in the National League in wins above replacement. His OPS, all of his slash numbers, are comparable to what he did when he was the MVP. I think even he admitted, and I think it was the Sahad of Sharma piece earlier this week, and Chris was really interesting, right? He said, yeah. I'm really upset when I'm struggling and when I'm not perfect and I'm always trying to be better. But he admitted that he set the bar so high by winning Rookie of the Year, the following year being the MVP. There's a little bit of Mike Trout syndrome there, where if Trout doesn't have an OPS of over 1,000, everyone says, what's wrong with him? And I think with Chris, you know, he hit into like three double plays in a week's time. It's, you know, why can't he get a hit with a runner in scoring position? All of that stuff. He hasn't been bad in those spots. He just hasn't been great. And I think anytime Chris is less than great at something, he gets dinged for it. It is a big boy league. I get that. And he will always be held to an incredibly high standard. But I do think that the All-Star break is a good time to step back and say, he's been one of the Cubs' best players since he got here. You probably have Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo. Those would be the three guys, right, since Chris made his big league debut. Those have been the three best players on this team. And I do think he gets overlooked. I think Rizzo does to an extent as well. And the only reason he didn't make the All-Star team is because of the years Josh Bell and Pete Alonso have had. But he's clearly one of the top three or four first basemen in the league, too.
Len, we had Jed Hoyer on the station today, specifically on the Mully and Haw show with Tom Thayer sitting in. And one of the things that, you know, Jed Hoyer repeated was that, quote, the second half will define this team. He also said that Joe Maddon has done everything that we as a management has asked him to do. I mean, it sounds to me like I don't see like a major change coming personnel wise, nor do I see the manager going at this point. That it sounds like give everybody one last shot this second half of the season to prove it, and if they can't, then maybe changes at the end of the season. Does that sound logical to you, or do you think the big changes could still be coming this year?
I think that's the most likely way to look at what will likely happen in the second half. I don't anticipate any paradigm shifting trades here before the end of this month. If anything, I do think they'll add, maybe try to pick up a left-hander for the bullpen, maybe another bench bat, but I don't see some sort of blockbuster, let's mix up the roster, change the clubhouse dynamic type of move. I think you said it right, Mark, that this second half now takes on very great importance. It is the final year of Joe's contract. You know, Cole Hamels, John Lester, these guys are not getting any younger. And while the Cubs' window that we have talked about for a while probably goes through 2021 when you look at the big contracts and the younger players who are not young anymore, you have these mini windows. The Cubs won a World Series in the Jake Arrieta mini window, and now we have a little bit of a different window with those starting pitchers. So, you know, I'm excited to see how it plays out. I think the roller coaster ride, while it hasn't been always fun, it has been fascinating to follow. And you know, sometimes it's good to see what your team is made of when it has its back against the wall. They're in first place, but I don't think anyone in that clubhouse feels that way. And they don't feel satisfied that even though they're atop the division that they've played great baseball, because they haven't.
Top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. Len, do you see the Cubs potentially paying top prospect prices if the player in return does help boost that window open a little bit more, like you say?
I would be surprised if they do that, Connor. I think the only way you do that is if you get someone who can be here for not only the end of this year, but maybe 2 or 3 years beyond, throughout the rest of that, quote, window. You know, they don't have as many prospects to dangle as they once did. They do have some good ones, but I think they would be very cautious about, you know, involving a Nico Horner or a Miguel Amaya, or even an Adbert Alzolay, somebody like that. No, I would guess they will try to hang on to their assets that way and maybe look for a move where if they have to take on a little more money and give up a little less in terms of player movement, that's probably what they would look to do. Kind of like the Cole Hamels deal last year, where they really didn't have to give up much in terms of players, but it was more about kind of taking a salary off a team's ledger.
You know, continuing in the National League Central, one team I still have not been able to quite figure out is the St. Louis Cardinals. They right now are two games back of the Cubs in the division, the bumper-to-bumper division, and they're hosting Arizona out of the break. They'll have Adam Wainwright going. Do you think St. Louis will be there in the end, and do you think that they are, you know, a real threat in this division still?
I'm with you, Mark. I can't figure them out. I think you could look at their season and say they have underachieved. And if that's the case, then they will or should be there in the end. When you add Paul Goldschmidt, you add Andrew Miller, you have Marcelo Ozuna in year two after the trade from the Marlins. Harrison Bader is a very intriguing young player. Dexter Fowler's had a bit of a bounce-back year. Yadier Molina still, Yadi. That lineup looks really good, and you know, they've got some interesting pitching, too. Now, Jordan Hicks is done for the year. But, you know, John Gant and Carlos Martinez, the former starter, they've got really good arms in their bullpen. Jack Flaherty has emerged as an intriguing starter. So I think that is a pretty talented roster that doesn't look on paper to be a 500 team. So they might be more of a player in the second half than they were in the first half. And the Cubs have, I think, half their season schedule against the Cardinals still to be played, right? Like 10 games left, including the final three games of the season. So I wouldn't count them out just yet. And I honestly wouldn't count any of the teams out prematurely. The Brewers are the defending champs. They have the best player in the division in Christian Yelich. The Pirates are really hard to play. I think the Reds' pitching has been good, and their offense has the potential to be better. They could even actually sell and still be a thorn in everybody's side. If they deal off a couple of veteran guys, I still think they could be intriguing. So it's a real tough division. It has made it look mediocre. I think in the big picture it may look that way, but when all five teams can beat anybody on any given day, I choose to look at it that it's a good division.
I hate to say this, but based on everything that you're saying right now, I know Cubs fans don't want to hear this. That sounds like a lot of fun. Like, if you could actually look at it objectively, when you said, Len, every team has a chance in that division, we haven't seen that, you know, at all for a long time. That makes it a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's where the unbalanced schedule works. I don't know if I were in charge of the schedule if I would have 19 games between intra-division rivals. Yeah. But in a year like this, you know, the head-to-head stuff is fascinating. And the other part is when Milwaukee's playing Pittsburgh or St. Louis is playing Cincinnati or the Cardinals are playing the Brewers, it's tough as a Cub fan to root for one team against
right,
the other.
Exactly.
I think you tend to root against the Brewers and the Cardinals, right? 1 and 1A.
Uh-huh.
But by the end of things, all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, the Pirates are half game out because they just swept Milwaukee. So you have to be careful in terms of who you root for and against.
Yeah, Len, I know you hadn't followed the story because it's the All-Star break and you're off, but with the warning about Gators, it sounded like you came across one of these monsters when you were in Florida.
We never had one in our pool, but there were people in our neighborhood who did. Usually you have a screened pool in the backyard. That's kind of a Florida staple. And every once in a while you'll come home from work and you'll just see like an eight-footer swimming around in your pool having broken through the screen. We had a canal in our back about our backyard, and the sounds at night, I wish I had recorded them. Oh, I mean, the frogs and the snakes and the birds and the exotic nature of
awesome.
South Florida was pretty fascinating. But we also had two small dogs, so we had to make sure they were very close to us at all times because gators tend to get them too. And poisonous frogs and all kinds of fun stuff.
You know, it's not like when you got a raccoon in your garbage door, you go, like, get out of here, You can't really do that with an alligator. They're not necessarily.
No, you can't. No. You can't. Yelling at them probably doesn't do a lot of good.
Well, yeah,
Len, appreciate you as always, man. Glad you're up here where the gators can't get you.
All right, well, I'll stay away from Humboldt Park for another day.
It's Len Casper, television play-by-play man for the Chicago Cubs, and his advice is it's well-worn. Don't. Let Alligator Bob deal with it.
Dude, you know? I totally want to go to South Florida now, man. And I want to just spend a few nights there and listen to all the wildlife.
It's like Len makes his backyard sound like Australia. Everything out there could kill you.
Len's zoo is still in existence.
Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer was on the Mully and Haw show this morning. It was an interesting look at his ball club as they come out of the break. You will hear from him when we come back. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Bernstein and McKnight Show here on 670 The Score. Mark Grody is in for Dan. This segment is driven by Prestige Exotics. If you're planning a business trip, a wedding, looking for the perfect ride for your child to arrive in style for homecoming, visit PrestigeExotics.com to rent your dream car. That's PrestigeExotics.com. Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer was on the Mully and Haw show this morning. Solid interview with GM looking at the state of his club heading into the second half of the season. Mully started it out pretty simply. You'll hear Jed answer. He wanted to know some of the positive takeaways from an underwhelming first half.
That was a great question, and I appreciate it. You know, I was going to say, and I said this last time I was on the radio, I think that sort of lost in some of the frustrations we've had about our overall offense is the fact that we have a lot of guys having really great years. A number of guys, you know, I think Chris Bryant's bounce back year is something that I think is certainly a nice silver lining for us. He's been fantastic. Wilson Contreras, the same thing. He really struggled in the second half of last year. He bounced back and has had a monster year. Hobby has continued what he showed last year. So I think the fact that we're having some really good individual performances and a couple guys, notably Bryant and Contreras, the guys that, whether through injury or through poor performance last year, were part of our struggles offensively at the end of last year. Those guys have been great. They've been all-stars. And I think that probably more than anything, the fact that those guys bounced back to become stars again is something that I think will certainly help us in the second half.
Hey, Jed, I was reading an interesting article, and it comes from Pro Football Talk, and it was by Chris Ballard, who's the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts. And throughout this lengthy article, he brings up how much respect he has for the leadership of the Chicago Cubs, yourself and Theo. And it's interesting because he talks about the impact that some of the guys in his background have on his decision-making process when you go through these difficult times. When you go through times like this or you have a break and you start thinking about some of your mentors, the influences, the advice that they would give you, who are your go-to guys that you think about that help you develop your thought process and into your career?
It's a great question. And obviously I've been with Theo for a long time and I've learned a ton from him, but he's there every day. You know, the managers I've been with have really been helpful to me. Notably, Terry Francona, Bud Black, and Joe, I think all three of those guys, really calm and measured. They see the game incredibly well. They always assess each game or each section of season the right way. Outwardly, they're positive. They're the same person every single day. And I think that's a key in baseball, is that we do this every night. And you're going to have ups and downs. You know, we had a stretch of season where we were, 23-7. We played as well as anyone in baseball. We now have a stretch of season where we really struggled and frustrated everybody, ourselves included. And I think that, being around guys like that and learning from them and seeing how they assess things, but also how measured they are and how much they realize that this is a marathon and we can't get too high and too low. That's always been really helpful. And then I think on the scouting side, Bill LaJoy was an old scout. He'd been a GM of the Tigers in '84. He was probably the first older scout that really sort of took me under his wing and really tried to teach me how to evaluate players, how to think about putting a team together. He's been gone for a while. But even now, I'll think back on different things he taught me that are really helpful. So I think in this game, I came up pretty young, and having veteran guys that are willing to take the time is really helpful. And for me, it's a good thing to hope for going forward. I want to have that role in some other people's lives. As I move on in this game and get older and more experienced, hopefully I can pass some things along, the way those guys did.
Along those lines, I think it's very interesting to hear you say that about the calmness of the managers and the influence that has on you, especially as a young executive. So what is the key then to dealing with the noise? Every once in a while, Theo will come out and say something like, hey, we're not blaming Joe. We have a blame here. Like, you have to be monitoring the noise, but how do you live with it? It just seems like there is this weird kind of panic or fear and loathing that you got to kind of get through sometimes in the course of a season.
Yeah, no question. It's difficult. There's no perfect way to do it. You try to think about dividing up the season into maybe, 10-game chunks or 20-game chunks so you don't get, too high or too low on individual games. But we all know that can be difficult. And I think that's one of the real skills in this game, and one that we know we're never going to master, but we try to get better at it, is realize, this is a sport where you the best teams win 6 out of 10 times. This is not football. It's not the NBA. You're not going to dominate your opponents. And so knowing that, trying to figure out what's real, what's a real hot streak, what's a real cold streak, is incredibly difficult. And right now, I think we're at that point. I think that, like I said before, we had a really good streak. We had a really bad streak. And, the good news is that through all that, the second half will define this team. Luckily for us, no one has run away with our division. We could be in the position of Boston or a Cleveland or an Oakland. They've had good first halves, but the team in first place got really hot. We were fortunate. We didn't have that. And so ultimately what we do over the next 2.5 months is going to define this team. And that's a good position to be in.
Hey, Jed, because it affects both pitchers and hitters, is the baseball too much of a topic at this point in the season? Because throughout the All-Star break, it seems like outside of the amount of home runs or the way the game went, that's been the topic of the week.
Yeah, I was just telling someone the other day that, I know with our players, it's been a constant source of discussion. And I'm sure if I'm hearing that from our players and having those discussions, that means that everyone's having those discussions. And so I think it is too much of a topic, but I can't blame the players. You think about it, if all of a sudden what you do for a living is changed dramatically, it's really difficult to mentally adjust to that. If you're a starting pitcher and you give up a 3-run homer on a pop-up to left field, those are 3 runs that go on your ERA. That's hard to just wash away. And so I do feel like with the pitchers, it's been a constant source of frustration. And I think even for executives, I think one of the hardest things for us is, the thought of, what's going to happen going forward. Is this the ball we're going to use in the future? If so, that's fine. We just have to adjust our scales. Is it not going to be, you know, this is something that mentally is hard to deal with because you don't know what, you know, what's going to happen going forward, and you don't know, you know, exactly what to make of these numbers. So I think it is too much of a topic. I hope it recedes in the second half. But my fear is that it won't, because it's going to get really hot in August and the ball is going to fly more. And I think this is here to stay in 2019. I think people are just going to be talking about it.
How do you feel about second base and the kind of up and down performances you've had from a lot of different guys there? How do you see that position flushing out moving forward?
Yeah, that's been, you know, one of the things I think that's been our hallmark is we've been really balanced around the field. Almost every position every year is, you know, above average. And, you know, this year, second base has just been a frustrating position. I think obviously Zoe, you know, being gone is a part of that. But Descalso has really struggled since the first, you know, 10 days of the season. And that's been, part of it. Ian Happ, has been working on a swing in Iowa. That's been part of it. So, you know, there's no question that's been a position that we've been, you know, cycling guys through, trying to get someone hot. And it hasn't happened yet, and we'll continue to do that because I do feel like what's made us really good is our depth. And right now, this is probably one of the only times I can remember, you know, since we've been good, that we haven't felt that deep. You know, we right now we've got some guys struggling, and we've got some guys, you know, not here. And I do feel like we need to get back to that feeling where you got, you know, 1 through 12 as far as the position players go. You're going to get a good at bat. You're going to get a guy that grinds, you know, grinds things out. And you're going to play good defense out of each guy. And I think we need to get back to that place.
You know, I was talking yesterday about Kimbrel, and I was saying I'm not going to have any judgment on him until at least 5 appearances after the All-Star break. What could he do for that position that you guys brought him in here for? If he comes out and he becomes as destructive as he was in the past of his career, how much confidence and how much help could that give the entire bullpen?
I think it's the whole team. I think that, you know, when you have a guy at the back of the game that you feel like, hey, if we can just pass the baton to him, it's over. Mentally, that's a huge lift for everybody. And obviously he's been that for almost his entire career. You know, he's still working his way back. You know, I think that his stuff, I thought, would look fantastic on Saturday night. That was the probably the first time, I think, with us that he just looked like the dominant, you know, Craig Kimbrel stuff, where, you know, hitters were really having a tough time even putting a decent swing on it. But there's going to be some inconsistencies. You know, even in that outing, he hit a guy in the foot. He walked a guy. So I think, yeah, giving him some time, I think, is fair. But I do think the lift that gives everyone is tremendous when you feel like you just have to, you know, pass the baton to that guy. And listen, I think our bullpen is really well set up, you know, going into the second half, and I'm confident that can be a strength of our team. Getting a little bit of a break and a rest and allowing those guys to reset, I think, will help us. And, you know, hopefully we can really get on a roll and, you know, get some good starts and hold some leads. And we know that's the best way to feel consistent about your team. Maybe getting 6 or 7 innings out of a starter and getting good relief pitching, you start winning those games, you know, 3-1, 4-1. That makes everyone feel a lot better, that you don't have to score a ton, that you don't have to scramble for wins. You know, clean wins, I think, make everyone kind of calm down and feel good about your team.
We've been talking this morning a bit about something Chris Bryant said. He was talking about Joe Maddon. Let me read you this quote. He said, "I honestly don't think there's anything else he can do. I've seen a big change in him, just how he approaches each and every guy. He's way more involved. He's talkative. He's positive every day. I love him. I love the way he runs the team. He's been doing everything right for us. We have to play better to show that he deserves to be here. A lot of that falls on us. We just haven't performed the way we should. I can think of a handful of ball games that we should have won, and that whole narrative would be much different, but it hasn't been that way, and we hope to change it. Certainly, he's not getting that blame." Is that accurate? Do you agree with what he says there?
Yeah, I think Joe's been incredibly active and engaged this year. There's no question about that. I think he and Chris have always had, you know, a really strong relationship. I think that, you know, that's the manager that, you know, walked in his office the, you know, the first day back when we were in the old clubhouse. And I think they've always had a strong bond. And I think Joe has always been a nice sounding board for him. But yeah, I think, you know, we're all in this together. I think that's the, you know, that's the most important takeaway of all of this, is that, you know, we're all constantly having discussions about how to improve, how to get out of this rut right now. Whether it's, you know, Theo, Joe, me, our players that have been here for a long time. You know, one of the best things about continuity is you can fall back on shared experiences. And so, yeah, I know Theo's had a number of conversations with players. I have on the road last time, being able to talk to those guys about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, how do we get this right? You can't do that with a guy you just brought in this year who hasn't been a part of our success. I think people like Chris and Anthony and a bunch of the guys that have been here for a while, we can have those discussions. And I think that that's really meaningful. So, I think Chris, you know, is taking a lot of responsibility on the players. And I think that's a great thing. And I think it bodes well for the second half.
Hey, Jed, Alzolay and Zobrist, do each of them have a role with the Cubs, or is there too much unknown about either or both of them to even answer that at this point?
Yeah, I think they both do. Obviously, with Ben, we're always trying to be respectful of his situation and not put any timetables on it. But I think he's going to help the 2019 Cubs the rest of the way. I think Adbert will as well. You know, one of the things with every season is that you need to get, you know, some unexpected lift from somebody. It happens every single year. You know, just what jumped into my head as I said that was, you know, last year I felt like, you know, we picked up Jesse Chavez in a small trade kind of around this time, and our bullpen was struggling, and he was a huge lift, you know, from a guy that we were sort of getting to help stabilize the bullpen, but certainly not throw, you know, huge innings against the Cardinals in his first series here. And so I just think you're going to need unexpectedly good performances out of guys in order to get where we need to go. And, you know, those guys, you know, are sort of in that category, and we have a number of other guys. But we're going to need a lift from someone not named Bryant or Rizzo or Contreras or Baez or those guys. Like, someone's going to have to step up. And, you know, that's what's fun about, you know, the baseball season. You don't really know what to expect. You just know that it's not going to play out exactly as you think.
The division was supposed to be really good, and everybody thought it was going to be the best division in baseball. And, you know, I guess you could argue that it's really good because everybody's good, but it hasn't been as good as anticipated. And you're leading it by half a game. So even though you struggled a little bit, you're leading by half a game. Does the fact that you're still in first place affect how you approach this trade deadline? And, Jed, obviously this is a new reality we're in where it's July 31st or bust. There's no other way of getting better there. So do you have a plan yet, or do you have to wait and see what happens in the division the first couple weeks of the second half here?
Yeah, you know, I think I'd fall back on what I said before. I think that we're just fortunate to be in first place. I don't sort of take any happiness in that. I think being four games over 500 is how I view the team. I think that we're still at that point in the season. You know, that obviously as you get into September and stuff, you look at, you know, you're going to look at, you know, the standings based on game, you know, one game or half a game. But, you know, right now I think that's how I see it. We're very fortunate. We're in first place. We haven't played like a first place team, you know, but that's where we are. And like I said before, the truth is we're very lucky that no one ran away with the division. And that gives us, that puts us in a good position. And obviously that position really matters at the trade deadline, to your point. It does matter as you think about making acquisitions, because, you know, every team is going to be more aggressive with a chance to win the division versus a chance to just have a one-game playoff. So it does make a difference. But certainly, you know, the last, you know, 60 games or so haven't felt like a first-place team. You know, on the division part, there's no doubt that I think that Milwaukee and St. Louis both are probably a little bit frustrated with how they played as well. I think they're probably having similar discussions. Both teams had really good stretches, and both teams had really bad stretches. And so I think that's right, that the division hasn't been quite as strong in terms of one loss record. But I will say it's the only division in baseball where everyone's trying to win. And that does make a big difference. There are no games that we have in our division against a rebuilding team. Now, every division is a team that's coming in trying to beat you. Every team is trying to make the playoffs. And that makes a difference, and that's going to affect the one-loss record at the end of the year with whoever wins our division. So I do think that while it hasn't been the sort of juggernaut division everyone expected, I still feel like it's a lot different than other divisions, and I think that's going to make a difference.
Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer on the division as it comes down to the second half of the season. Mark Grody in for Dan Bernstein. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Did you know that Baseball Reference just tweeted out their postseason odds for the second half? You want to know who's at the very top of the thing?
Do tell, Connor McNaughton.
It's the Cubs. It's 68.7%. Wow. Brewers in second place, 38.5%.
That much of a difference.
Yeah, Cardinals at 15, Pirates at 13, Reds at 10. Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves will open the season on Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Lawrence Holmes is in the house. Transition's coming up in just a couple. But before we get out of here, you and I are going to do the show tomorrow, and we're going to be in a cool spot doing some cool stuff where you can come out and hang out with us because we're close to cool. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Our thank yous go to Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune and Len Casper, who does the play-by-play for the Cubs on television. Producers today, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, and Brian Gertsch had the video feed. Mark Grody was in for Dan Bernstein. I'm still Connor McKnight. I probably will be tomorrow as well. You'll be Dan tomorrow, too. And we will be at Smoke Daddy in Wrigleyville, 3636 North Clark, before the Cubs take on the Pirates. You can stop in to see us. We'll be there from 9 to noon. Lawrence will be there after that to the Cubs pregame show at 1245. It's all presented by Ambetter from Illini Care Health. Should be a fun show tomorrow. Looking forward to being out with the people. We will have Jonah Carey kicking off our baseball weekend and baseball second half. Transition with Lawrence is next. 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.